Welcome to the Family Hustle Podcast,
where the secrets of family and financial success go hand in hand.
A little hustle
goes a long way.
Alec Borenstein here, one of the hosts of the show, along with my sister, Amanda Abu. We are brother and sister entrepreneurs. I'm a business and estate planning attorney at Pashman Stein Walder Hayden, and Amanda's a realtor with Signature Realty in New Jersey. On this podcast, we sit down with our fellow business owners to talk about how they built successful businesses and were able to grow their families at the same time. Today, though, I have Chad Franzen here of Rise 25, who has done thousands of interviews with successful entrepreneurs, investors, and CEOs. And we flipped the script, and he is going to be interviewing me. Chad, welcome to the show.
Hey, Alec, thanks so much. Appreciate the chance to be here. Before we get started, I'll let everybody know that this episode is brought to you by Pashman Stein Walder Hayden. At Pashman Stein Walder Hayden, they counsel individuals, businesses, and public entities. Their areas of practice include litigation, criminal defense, labor and employment, crisis management, commercial real estate, land use, trust and estates, and more. Their diverse clientele includes Fortune 500 companies, entrepreneurial businesses, professional athletes, and celebrity influencers. They have a deep bench of outstanding, highly engaged, committed lawyers with strong connections to the region. To learn more, go to PashmanStein.com. Hey, Alec, thanks so much for having me today. How are you?
Great. How are you doing?
Good. Thank you. Hey, I'm looking forward to getting into some of this with you. I know your podcast is kind of focused on busy adults, kind of trying to balance a lot of things in life. We'll kind of get into that. You are an attorney, as I mentioned. Tell me a little bit about that and kind of what you do.
Sure. So I am an estate planning attorney. I deal with a lot of business owners and families as they're trying to think about how to move wealth from one generation to another generation, and also to protect themselves in case they have some litigation or anything like that, because we do live in a very litigious society. It's gratifying. I started out as a litigator, so I made the transition into this area of the law, and it's actually really fit me well. Fits my personality. I don't fight anymore, which is nice. I used to be fighting with clients and judges and adversaries all the time, and now I'm just helping people every single day. So I really love it. It's really gratifying, and it's nice to know that I can use my profession to actually help people and not, get into arguments all the
time. Very nice. How and when did you know you wanted to be a lawyer? Were you good at debating when you were younger, or what led you to this?
So actually it was, I was about, 10 or 11 years old. And my cousin said to me, he said, Alec, and I was young at that point. I was, maybe 12 or so. It was a while back. And he said to me, Alec, there's this show out called Law and Order. I think you should check it out and see what you think. On the first half, they have the cops, and the second half, they have the lawyers. So I started watching it and I was like, oh my God, like they have the most amazing cases every single week. How is this even possible? I found out later, though, that if you were to have just one of those cases in your lifetime, you would have an amazing career. So apparently it's not real life. But I was just so enthralled as a kid. I thought it was the best thing ever that I was like, I think I should be a lawyer. And as a result, I am a lawyer. I would say also both of my parents are lawyers. So maybe that's unfortunate for me because I had to live in a house with lawyers. Mm-hmm. But, I was definitely surrounded by it. But I think it was the excitement of, every single week there being a new story kind of got me excited about being an attorney, even though I do none of that now.
Yeah. That's awesome. Did you, so you mentioned earlier in your career, you argued a lot. Did you have anything that resembled one of those episodes?
We had one case where there was a factory, and they employed a woman, and they sexually harassed her. And instead of, they actually sued her, even though she was the one who was sexually harassed, and we got her off. And that was probably one of the most exciting moments of my life, on the litigation front as an attorney. Mm-hmm. Just knowing that there was this woman who was harassed by these horrible, terrible people, and we were able to protect her. That was amazing. And honestly, if I was doing things like that all the time, I'd probably still be litigating. But it's very rare we get, an exciting case like that.
How did you get into the legal industry? You went to law school, I'm guessing.
I did go to law school. I did go. And I can't say that I'm the model for how to get into law school, because my main criteria for applying to law school was ensuring that wherever it was I was applying to had palm trees. So I applied to Miami. I applied to San Diego. I applied to LA. I applied to San Francisco. As long as there were palm trees, I was interested in being there. After growing up in New Jersey and, you know, with the cold winters and going to college in New York and just being here forever. So I went with the one that was interested in me the most. And, you know, honestly, they gave me a full scholarship. So I was like, all right, I'm going there. So I ended up in Los Angeles and it was great. It was great living with palm trees for 3 years. And I learned that living with palm trees isn't all cracked up to be.
The that philosophy in terms of choosing where to apply, that sounds perfectly reasonable to me.
I would
follow that exact same philosophy. Hey,
my feeling was that, like, you know, if I'm going to be in a place with palm trees, I'll be able to study on the beach. And so I tried that for like a week or two, but then it was just, I realized it's not going to work and I was stuck in the library or
something. Well, at least you had a nice walk from wherever you lived to a place where you were studying or something like that. Hey, tell me a little bit about your life outside of being an attorney. What's going on with your personal life?
Oh man, where to begin? So I also have a family and a couple of kids, and I manage some real estate also in New York, about 5 commercial properties in New York. So I handle that a lot, especially on weekends. And I'm also getting a master's in taxation. I'm head of security for my synagogue. There's just, you know, there's a lot going on, you know, and I have 2 kids and a wife that keep me pretty busy, and it's great. You know, I think I've been not busy and I've been busy, and I would much rather be busy. And I think that's also one of the reasons that really brought me to this idea for the podcast is just this, you know, how is a person so busy with all the things and growing a family and still growing a business and, you know, getting in the mind of business owners in terms of how they juggle it all. I think there are a lot of people in this situation, and I think we can learn from each other.
Yeah, absolutely. So you're an attorney, you're a property manager, you are a graduate student and a husband and parent. Did I miss anything there? Oh, and you're the head of security for your synagogue.
Exactly.
What are the, so tell me, what does a typical day look like, if there is a typical day?
There is no typical day, but most days resemble waking up early and trying to get the kids on the bus without yelling at them as possible. And then once they're on the bus and celebrating for a few minutes that they're on the bus, you know, just get dressed, go to work. I'm in the office a lot, fielding calls on all types of things, you know, talking to clients, helping them with their plans, learning about them, you know, ways to really help protect their families. Then when it's all over, usually there's something going on at night. You know, sometimes I'm playing basketball, sometimes I'm working on the masters, sometimes I'm, you know, doing property stuff. There's always something going on, and you know, hope that maybe my wife and I can watch a TV show together every now and again.
How much emotional investment is there in each of those things?
Well, I guess I'll tell you one thing. My therapist might tell you another thing, but in terms of, I mean, there's a lot. There's a lot going on all the time, and things are very busy. It's good to take a break every now and again. I can't say I'm very good at doing that, but it's good to take a break every now and again. And just try to remember, you know, life is amazing and people are amazing. And, you know, so I try to hang out on the weekends with friends also. But there's a lot of emotion that goes into all of it. And, you know, because the idea is, even though I'm doing a lot of things, I don't want to do a bad job on the things that I'm doing. Especially like if you think about security for the synagogue, anti-Semitism is on the rise. And it's like, you know, the world that I live in isn't the same world that my parents grew up in. And to a certain extent, it's actually worse. And, you know, it's more dangerous. And so I take that very seriously. And so I'm thinking about all these things all the time. So I guess the hardest thing is trying not to let these things bleed into each other. I will say that I've been doing a better job, especially with my work, you know, as an attorney, just focusing on that. And then, you know, when I have other things, I sort of just, you know, think about them.
Mm-hmm. So beyond the kind of the emotional investment, logistically, what's the key to success in terms of having all that stuff going on?
I would say organization, and also having a team, a good team around you, and all of those different things. So, like if I'm doing the properties, I have an assistant who helps me with the properties. You know, on the legal end, I work with some amazing partners, one of whom actually we're going to have a talk with very soon at the firm. So I'm very excited about that. And you know, just they're just amazing mentors, and they've guided me, you know, in amazing ways. And the other attorneys there, the paralegals, everyone is just a fantastic team. And so, you know, for the podcast, right? We didn't even talk about doing this, right? The podcast with my sister, you know, she's awesome. And she, you know, working with her is just amazing too. So, you know, there's a lot. There's, I think, surrounding yourself with people you like, people who are good at what they do, and also just doing your best to be as organized as humanly possible is usually the best way.
So what is that kind of the key to, you know, as I mentioned the, or I asked you about the emotional investment, let's say, you know, something happens in one area of your life, like with your job as an attorney, and then you have to go and, you know, help your kids with sports or something, but you're thinking about the attorney responsibilities, or, you know, if something happens with the property management, how do you kind of like compartmentalize that, or do you compartmentalize that?
I definitely compartmentalize that. I think, cause like the idea for me is wherever I am, I want to be as present as humanly possible. So I'm here with you now. I'm focused on you and this conversation and, you know, that kind of a thing. If I'm working on estate planning, I'm working on the plan and the people and, you know, what's going on here. If I'm having a consultation with somebody, talking to them about planning, you know, I may talk to a lot of different people, but for them, this is, you know, talking, you know, what, it's interesting because every single day I talk about things that people hate talking about, which is usually death. And that's what I talk about. And I don't take it for granted the fact that it's not easy for people to talk about. And I think if I was talking to a person and in my mind, I was like, oh no, a roof is leaking, I need to figure out how to fix it, I don't think I'll be able to be as present and as helpful, you know, for those people in that moment. And so I think, I don't know that, you know, it's compartmentalization for me as much as it's just understanding the value of being present and trying mm-hmm. to be where you are and being fully there, you know? And I think just in general for our lives, you know, that's, so if I'm with my kids, I'm not trying to think about any of this stuff. I'm trying to be fully there. If I'm talking to a tenant, I try to be fully there. And then, you know, that way you can ensure that at least in that moment, you're giving as much as you can. It's harder when you're just like, you know, at home and you're like, you have quiet moments. That's when things start bleeding into each other, mm-hmm. you know, and that's when it's harder to be fully present. But when I'm with a person or I'm working on something, I'm in it and I'm in that moment more than anything.
Have you always been able to do that? Do you have any advice on, like, you know, if I get into a fight with my wife and then I kind of have to come in here and work, I'm kind of thinking about that or like I'm frustrated or whatever. Do you have any thoughts on how to kind of get over that or get through that?
I try to think of the words, I don't know why, but they sort of play in my head. You know, be a professional. And, you know, when, to me, being a professional is just understanding that, you know, you're not like having things bleed into each other is not a good practice. One of the things I also used to do a lot more before COVID is I like speaking. I like getting out there. I like talking. And there've been many times before in the past where right before I get up, I hear some sort of bad news or something that could shake me and something that could, you know, really set off the entire thing. And I've learned in those moments to try to be as professional. And, you know, I'll give you a story if that's okay. Something that happened, which kind of tells this point. So when I was, before I was at Pashman, I was working, I was an entrepreneur. I was an attorney in my dad's firm, but my dad didn't pay me a salary. I was kind of operating as a separate silo within the firm. And, you know, I met with a lot of business owners who, you know, correlate on that front. So when I was working for my dad's firm, it was September 10th, 2020. So we're COVID, right? And there was this family that I was working with. And back then, during that year, I rarely met anybody in person. The only time I would meet people in person was to actually sign the document. So there was this one family that I met probably over Zoom like 7 times, and we're going through the documents. They wanted many changes back and forth. But finally, we were getting to the moment where we're going to meet in person for the first time and sign the documents. And I was in Brooklyn, and I parked my car in Brooklyn, and I got a phone call from my mom. And my mom said, I just want you to know that your grandmother, my dad's mom, is not doing well. And, you know, the time, it might be close to her passing away. And so I was a little bit shaken, but my head was like, you're a professional. You've got a signing. These people, like, this is really important. So I walked into the signing, and the woman of the couple said to me, you know, it's very important that you do this the right way. You sign everything the right way, which of course I do every time. But she said, I really want you, you know, make sure everyone signs in the right place and we get the right thing done. I want you to double check, triple check, make sure everything is done the right way. I said, don't worry. I promise you, I'm going to do that. About 10, 15 minutes later, she said, Alec, it's really important to me that you double check, you triple check. I promise you, I'll do it. You know, yeah. And I was like, okay, I get a phone call, and I never take phone calls when I'm with clients, but because I knew, you know, we're getting to the end with my grandmother, I took the phone call. And so it was my dad calling, and he said, you know, grandma passed away. And so I'm sure my face, you know, sort of, you know, whatever. But again, my mind is like, you got to be professional. I hung up the phone. The woman was like, you know, what happened? And I said, I just found out that my grandmother passed away. She said, oh my God, I'm so sorry. But again, in my mind, I'm like, don't worry, we're going to be fine. 10 minutes later, she said, Alec, you need to double check. You need to triple check. You need to make sure everything. I was like, I promise you, I'm going to do it. It's great. I promise you. And then another 10 minutes later, and like, we're getting closer to the end. She's like, Alec, make sure. And I was like, and then at that point, her husband chimed in. He's like, yeah. And the reason why we're so insistent about this was because when my dad died, the attorney had them sign in the wrong places. And we had to track down the witnesses, you know, in terms of where they were. And I said, don't worry about it. And he said, yeah, one of the witnesses that we had to track down, his name was Irving Bornstein, but he spells his name differently than you do. You know, you don't have an E in your name. He does have an E in your name. And I said, no, actually, I do have an E in your name. I was like, Irving Bornstein, like that was the witness? He said, yeah. I said, my grandfather's name is Irving Bornstein. He said, it is? Well, did your grandfather live at 2424 East 64th Street in Brooklyn? And I said, that's exactly where he lived. He's like, I live next door to him my entire life. I know your grandfather was a witness to my dad's will. Then the mother said, wait a second, that phone call that you just got, was that Miriam? Was that Miriam who died? Did she pass away? And I said, yeah, that I got to call Miriam. She's like, oh my God, Miriam, we know her so well because we were right next door. Like she, you know, your grandparents were amazing. I can't believe she died. And it was like this amazing thing where like we didn't even know that we had this connection together, you know. And in the end, later that night, they actually sent me an email with a picture of my grandparents having been at their wedding many, many years ago, and we had no idea.
Wow.
It was a crazy, crazy, crazy story. Like I met them 7 times over Zoom. Not once did we have this conversation. You know, I had no idea. And then all of a sudden, like, you know, she also said, wait a second. She used to have a grandson who used to help him with the properties. Is that you? Is that you? And I said, yeah, that was me. Like, this is crazy. So in the end, I was like, I checked everything. I double checked. I triple checked. And even though my grandmother just died and, you know, I had to be as professional as humanly possible. And in the end, it ended up being a nice thing, a nice connecting thing. So, you know, you just never know what'll happen.
Yeah. Wow. That is an amazing story. Hey, so what do you do to stay just logistically organized? Do you use some tool or something like that?
I make every night, the night before, I make a list of what's happening the next day. And I make sure that, you know, I have that set ahead. And also in terms of the week, you know, before the week, I make sure that the next week is lined up exactly the way that, you know, I want it to be and that I think it should be, you know, going forward. Of course, things change. And I can't say that I'm amazing at organization, but, you know, to the extent that I am organized, I find it very important to be that way. Otherwise, I wouldn't be able to do it.
Last question for you. You've got this podcast now going on. It's kind of focused on busy adults and how people get through life or succeed in life. What are you looking forward to learning most?
I think, you know, the idea for the podcast, there are two points. Part of it is learning, because I do want to learn strategies from people in terms of how they did it. You know, the plan for us is to talk to, you know, mostly entrepreneurs, but also people who work with families and really have a sense of how everyone makes it work. And, you know, I want the first piece of it is for me to learn and to share and to everybody in general, how they did it. You know, so the thing about entrepreneurs is that it's very lonely being an entrepreneur. You know, you really, you know, half the time you have to organize yourself. You make your own schedules. You know, who's holding you accountable other than, like, you know, the mortgage and, you know, those types of things? You know, how do you do it? And it's a very lonely enterprise. So the first piece is to learn tips and strategies from people who are successful. And I've worked with successful people in terms of how to do it. That's the first piece. And the second piece is also just, I want people to feel a sense of solidarity. You know, I don't want people to feel so alone. I want people to understand that, yeah, you know, it's hard and, you know, it's not easy out there. And especially now, you know, interest rates are rising and we're living in uncertain economic times, but there are people out there who've made it and there are people there who really understand how to do it. And I want them to, you know, get a sense of, you know, I'm not alone. I can do this. There are people out there. And then maybe even if we create a network of people, it could be, you know, a really spectacular thing and, you know, create a community of people who are just, we understand we're in this together, even if we're all alone doing our own things. And, you know, we can work together and really try to help each other, you know, make it happen.
That's great. Would you say that loneliness factor is the most, I'm sure there's all kinds of surprises when it comes to entrepreneurship. Is that one of the most overlooked things that happen in the life of an entrepreneur?
Absolutely. I mean, when you first get started, you're super excited. You know, you think you can take on the world and you try to. And so, you know, you create these business plans and, you know, you're like, you raise money and you're like excited and you're like, I'm going to do this. And some people quit their jobs, which I did do at one point also. And it's like, you know, you have to, you really just throw, you know, put everything in. But then the grind happened, you know, and it's Monday and Tuesday and January and February and March. And then as you start getting into it, because you feel so alone, because, you know, you don't have anyone holding you accountable, you really start to just lose faith. You know, it gets harder. You know, you start, you know, talking to God or whoever and, you know, trying to think like, you know, what did I do? You know, that kind of a thing. And, you know, so yes, that is the thing that you don't count on, especially in the beginning when you're super excited and you're like, I can do this and you can do this, you know, but it's just, you have to, you know, if we come together and we understand we're in this together, I think it'll be a little bit easier for all of us.
Sounds good. Hey, well, I'm sure your podcast will be very informative and very helpful for those who listen to it. It's been great to talk to you today, Alec. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Chad. Have a good weekend.
So long, everybody.
Thank you for listening to the Family Hustle Podcast. If you enjoyed this episode, please click subscribe to be the first to have access to future episodes. And remember, a little hustle goes a long way.